Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today, we would usually talk about the race, the French GP, but there's one topic that stands out which is unrelated to this specific event. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Vogel. Hello everyone to episode 147 of the Fastest Lap podcast. Maybe it wasn't 100% correct what I said in the introduction. Today's topic is in some way related to the French GP, as it pronounced the situation even more. The level of negativity around Formula One is currently the highest I can remember. Would you agree on that, Fergal?
I would. Certainly since I've been watching intensely, it sort of seems to be the highest amount of negativity surrounding the whole thing. And it's not great by any stretch. And I mean, at the same time, I'm still getting excited and looking forward to weekends. I don't think that will ever go away, but at the same time, you know, it's much different to years gone by. I mean, even when we had the Mercedes domination, there was just a bit more. In the early hybrid era. There was more. Even then, there was more, just flair and things to look out for in the weekend. And now.
But why is it? Is it because of the streak of wins of Mercedes, or is it the lack of action? Or, I mean, I really can't explain it to myself, to be honest.
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of things there.
You mean a combination of many things?
Yeah, I mean, particularly this year, I think a lot of people expected Ferrari to be up there. And certainly after preseason testing, a lot of media were saying that they were going to be up there. Maybe that influenced some people. But, you know, even aside from preseason testing, Ferrari seemed to be on the up after their 2017 season, which was a huge, huge step from 2016. Then it went away in the last part of the season. 2018, their car was really good in 2018, but towards the end of the year, it fell away again. And just going with that ladder, Ferrari climbing that ladder, it was sort of maybe expected that this year they would come into their own even more and properly challenge Mercedes and perhaps be the year where they are consistently the quicker car. And perhaps their failure to deliver, certainly in the first eight races of the year, has disappointed a lot of people. I mean, I know certainly it's disappointed me, not because I want to see Ferrari up there winning, but because I want to see as many teams as possible up there winning and giving us an exciting battle. And then also, I mean, you have this large gap in between the top teams in the midfield, which sort of has been present for a long time now, and you have people on social media sharing stuff like, you know, the Formula B or Formula 1.5 championship or whatever it is, and that itself, yeah, I think is promoting huge negativity, because you're dividing the series yourself, and then you go and complain that there's all this it's all negative and everything like that. You know, it's not healthy to do those things yourself, but it is definitely a combination of a lot of things and a lot of talk. I mean, every single weekend now we have talk of 2021 and the new regulations, and I'm just really hoping that they deliver, because if they don't, it's going to be massively disappointing, because the build-up is going to be huge. We've been talking about the 2021 regulations for so long now, and we will continue to do so right until they're introduced, I think.
Could it also be a case of not having two drivers really fighting for the championship? I mean, looking back, 2016 we had Hamilton, Rosberg, 2017 we had Vettel a bit, 2018 we had Vettel up to a certain point, but already not even halfway through the season, I mean, you cannot say it is over. It's not over until it's over. But I think the gap between first and second place in the championship, I haven't looked it up whether whether there is a stat on that or something, but it seems pretty big. Would be interesting to know when the last time when this gap was really as big as it is now.
Between the constructors, is it that you're
constructors and drivers?
Yeah, I mean, the gap between Mercedes and Ferrari, first of all, is quite huge. I mean, Mercedes have taken what, 6 1-2 finishes this year, out of 8, and that's astonishing. Yeah, it's 6 1-2s out of 8. Monaco and Canada were the other non-1-2 finishes, but they still won those races. And then the gap between, I'm not quite sure what the number is between Mercedes and Ferrari, but between Hamilton and Bottas, it's 36 points. That sort of seems to be where the fight is for the championship right now between Hamilton and Bottas. And if you're going to back one of them, you'd probably back Hamilton, just because of his... Yeah, well, we all know what Hamilton can do, and Bottas so far has failed to show, basing on the last two seasons, he's failed to match Hamilton really over the course of the season. And he started off well this year, of course, but Hamilton's won, the last 4 races now in a row, so yeah, it's going really, really well for him. But it is quite a shame to have Ferrari so far behind, especially when we know that there is pace on the car. I mean, we've seen it in Bahrain, first of all, and then we've seen it in Canada again. I think in the race, the Mercedes probably was the quicker car, but, you know, the Ferrari finished first on the track. I think we're not going to talk about the penalty anymore. Hopefully when we get to Austria, all that talk will be behind us.
No, we have other penalties to talk about, but maybe we'll get to that later in the episode.
Yeah. What was I saying about... Yeah, so it's just... at the same time, you know, it's sheer class from Mercedes, and you can't really blame Mercedes for doing a good job. It's quite admirable what they're doing, and it's up to the other teams really to catch up, or especially Ferrari and, you know, maybe Red Bull. The other teams, the way that the sport is now, they don't have a chance to catch up really because of the money and everything, the big gaps that already exist. So that's one thing for 2021 that hopefully will be eliminated, and we'll have a more equal playing field. But for sure, it's quite difficult to look at the championship and just sigh a little bit and think that, you know, back at preseason testing, it seemed to be a much different story and we were expecting something a lot different. But yeah, unfortunately, that's just not what we've got.
I mean, what you're saying could very well be true. Negativity or disappointment, usually or most of the time, basically arises from having expectations. And as you said, I think the media, Formula One itself on their website, and maybe even the Ferrari team itself with their comments, they build up those expectations from fans or from neutral viewers. And well, the season turned out completely different, and with those expectations not met, of course that could be a huge reason why there is such negativity. And I just checked the numbers as you were talking. The gap in the Constructors' Championship is 140 points, and the even more amazing stat is, if you would only count the points of Lewis Hamilton, he'd still only be 11 points behind Ferrari.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Actually, I just want to add as well to the negativity. I think a big part of that, I kind of mentioned it before, but a big part of it is, I think, social media. And the use of social media where anybody can literally go on and say anything they want and complain, and you know, there's nothing wrong with complaining.
But I mean, it kind of builds up, right? If you're having a mild negative, let's put it like that, a mild negative attitude, but you see someone else writing, oh, this race was complete shit or something, then, well, maybe you write something similar, you know, and then someone else reads those two statements, and I don't know, there's some kind of build-up of that.
Yeah, I mean, it impacts what you're thinking. I mean, if someone sends you a text message, you know, that's harassing or insulting to you, it's not going to put you in a good mood. And it's the same thing for a lot of fans with Formula One who, maybe like me, enjoy Formula One, you know, very, very much. And then you go on and you see a comment about, how it's terrible and something, and it gets you thinking, oh, why is it terrible? And then, and it's a social media thing where literally anybody can go on and say anything they want, really. I actually checked, I think it was last night, I took a look at the race highlight video on YouTube from the Formula One channel, and the like to dislike ratio was quite something. Quite a lot of dislikes on the video. Yeah. I think another thing as well, I wonder if there would be this, if it was the other way around, and if it was Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel dominating right now, with maybe Leclerc getting a couple of victories, like Bottas has got, I wonder if there would be this much negativity. I'm not so sure that there would. Of course, domination isn't great, but I think fans would accept that they're seeing, you know, someone new winning, because we've watched Mercedes win now for a long time. I mean,
5 years.
Yeah, I mean, Vettel. I mean, I remember the last part of the season in 2013, where Vettel just completely dominated, and people, you know, were like, oh well, you know, it can't get any worse than this. You know, it's easy, because you did turn up to the weekend, and once Vettel stuck it on pole, you knew he was just going to run away with the race. That seems like, you know, a long time ago now, and we've been waiting for someone else to come in and start winning races.
But something I still remember from that 2013 season, I think it even was the last race, where Vettel said on his cooldown lap in the last race, we need to remember these days, guys, or something. And I mean, how fitting that was, because after that it went pretty much downhill for Red Bull, and yeah, let's hope they remembered those days.
Yeah, but you know, it is interesting though to think if it was reversed, if Ferrari were in the position now, if the comments and the situation would be as negative as it is.
I don't think they would.
I don't think so either. I think people would be not enjoying domination per se by a single team, but enjoying watching someone else win, because it has been just utterly crushing by Mercedes over the last 5 years, and the way that the season's going, it looks like it's going the same way again. And even in France, for example, Ferrari brought, you know, quite a few upgrades. It was actually a bigger upgrade compared to what they brought in Spain. It was the biggest upgrade package that they had brought across the whole season so far, and you know, it didn't work properly. The floor they had to take back, and that floor, while I'm mentioning it, hasn't been sidelined. They're gonna test more of it in Austria, the front and rear wing, which seemed to be okay, but didn't really deliver that much. But I think post race, Mattia Binotto, the team principal of Ferrari, confirmed that Ferrari will be concentrating on adding more downforce to the car at the at the expense of straight line speed, where we know that Ferrari do have a strength over Mercedes. But yeah, it seems that now they're, well, I'm sure they've always realized it, but this championship is yeah, like you said earlier, it's not over till it's over, but it's nearly over, I think. We're nearly halfway through the season now, which in itself is crazy to think. But it's time is ticking really for Ferrari now, and we'll see what they come out with in the next few weeks. But you think that if they are going to win the championship, they need to start getting 1-2s in most races in the last portion of the season, and it's right now it's quite difficult to see that they'll actually achieve that.
Yeah, and adding more downforce definitely seems to be a good idea, as we've seen in the first couple of races that the Ferrari seems to be a pretty low drag car. They are most of the time pretty high up on the top top speed standings, meaning probably the car has the least amount of drag of the top teams. So yeah, maybe using a bit of that advantage to add more downforce to the car could be a step into the right direction. But as you said, realizing or doing something about that after half of the season is already over, yeah, how much will that really help them, or should they better focus on next season, as we've sadly said for them said in the last couple of races years, of course, when they were maybe three quarters of the season already clearly behind. But yeah, in the French GP, as you said, we had a similar picture with Mercedes running away. Vettel had a poor qualifying, but managed to get through the field, not maybe Verstappen. But I think we need to talk about Gasly's performance again. We did that in the last couple of races, but we know the summer break is coming up, and I don't have a good feeling about Gasly at Red Bull. And I think the quote of Helmut Marko saying, "Oh, Gasly does not need to worry about his seat at Red Bull." I mean, isn't that usually a clear indication in football or something that the coach will be sacked in the next couple of days or something? Sure. I mean, it doesn't look good for Gasly, does it?
No, it definitely doesn't. I'd really love to know what's going on at Red Bull right now. I mean, it's obvious that Red Bull aren't happy with the way he's performing. Maybe at the start of the season, they, you know, could give a bit of understanding towards it. With a big jump in a different car, he needed a bit of adjusting, and it sort of seemed that he was adjusting. Remember when we got to Baku, what was the race before Baku? China, you know, where he finished P6. He was a long way off, but he still finished P6. In Baku, he was running in P6 when he had an engine issue and retired. So it did look like he was on, you know, he was recovering and he was learning and, you know, getting up to speed. But then, yeah, the last couple of weekends have not been great at all. In Canada, you know, getting outscored by both Renaults, and then in the race, yeah, I mean, qualifying P9 behind the two McLarens, you know, and a Renault, and then even in the race, what was it, two McLarens, two Renaults, and an Alfa Romeo finished on the track ahead of him, wasn't classified. We'll probably talk about that in a few minutes, but
you know, and whereas his teammate finished P4.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not good for Gasly. And it's a shame because, you know, Gasly, he's a great driver. We saw him last year, what he can. He had some good performances in the Toro Rosso. It's hard to know how much of a challenge he ever really had from Brendan Hartley. But yeah, at the same time, he didn't disappoint last year. And Red Bull obviously had the faith in him to promote him. They wouldn't have. I don't think Red Bull would have been quite the team to, you know, take him and expect him to be performing where he currently is performing. So, yeah, it's... but then, you know, if he... It's interesting because if he gets the sack, the man that's going to replace him, well, should be, or, you know, has to be, there's no really else that will replace him, is Daniel Caviat. And...
Yeah, that would that's what I would bet on.
It's there's no one really else. I don't think that would come in. But I just wonder if Red Bull. I'm not trying to stir up anything here. I'm just sort of wondering in my own head if Red Bull are how much pride they have in not promoting Caviat because of the way that they have, tossed him around their whole program over the last couple of years. I mean, he's been promoted, demoted more times than I can count nearly.
Yeah, but because of that, you could say, well, it's not a big deal because they have sacked him and rehired him and he went off to Ferrari and then again drove for a Red Bull. Could also be an argument to say, well, they don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, it would be astonishing, though, if he ended up back at Red Bull alongside the man that replaced him at the team there a few years ago. It would be incredible, but, you know, we're not quite there yet. But, yeah, for sure, Gasly needs to pick up the points. I mean, Red Bull are in this position now where they're not in the title fight, but they're far away from the midfield. It's kind of the position. It must be quite frustrating for them. It's been the position that they've been in for the last 2 or 3 years now, but or even more than that. So going probably way back actually, 2015-2016, but They're losing points certainly with Gasly finishing where he is, but at the same time, Red Bull, their position for third in the championship probably isn't in any danger anyway because of how far ahead they are of the midfield and how far behind they are from the other teams. So I wonder if that's going to be a factor at all to their decision making, in that they're very, very, very unlikely to lose a spot in the Constructors' Championship because of it. We'll see, but yeah. France, I think, was quite possibly his worst performance of the season, I think.
Yeah, and sadly, of course, at his home race in Paul Ricard. But yeah, as you said, we'll see what will happen with that story, and of course, we'll keep you up to date on that. Now, one topic that also maybe added a bit to the negativity and was quite prominent also on social media was, again, after Canada, the decision of the stewards. And, well, we had that good fight at the end of the race where Lando Norris, he struggled with the car as they had some hydraulic issues. And, yeah, what did you make of the whole situation where Ricardo tried to overtake him, Norris had to go wide, and then Ricardo overtook Raikkonen? First of all, what did you think of the whole situation? And then I think it's nearly the same question as I ask you in Canada. Would you have given the penalty as a steward? Or the two penalties? Actually, there were two penalties.
The incident itself was, or the action itself was very exciting. It's a shame we didn't get to see it on the live feed. We were watching, I think Leclerc close in on Bottas or Hamilton cross the finish line or something. But it was definitely really, really exciting with all four cars attached together like that. Probably the only thing that was exciting during that race. But first of all, I think I'll just say the second penalty, the one with Raikkonen. You know, it's a slam dunk penalty for me, that one.
For me, yeah, as well.
I mean,
clear penalty.
He went off the track to overtake him. It's, you know, that's always been the rule, and they've pretty much always been pretty consistent with that, I think. I think it was that instance was just a bit frustrating because we didn't have much overtaking, and when we finally did, it was, you know, penalised, and maybe that's what frustrated fans, that it seemed like they were penalising action, but, you know, it's you can't go all four wheels off the track to overtake. It's just against the rules. So
but the question is, I mean, it's a similar situation to what we had to Abu Dhabi a few years ago. I can remember when Vettel overtook Grosjean in some race and then had to give the position back. But why do they design the track like that, that you do have a wall on the outside and then put another strip of tarmac in there with a wide lane where they're wide enough to basically have another car in there? I don't really get it. It's not a natural track limit.
Yeah, well, it's important to remember that Paul Ricard was designed as a, or it was modified, let's say, to be, you know, the ultimate test track for testing, hence all the excessive runoffs. But yeah, I get what you mean.
They could easily define the inner white line, for example, of the blue stuff as the limit of the track, for example.
Yeah, and I think it would have been different as well if Ricardo was forced off the track by Raikkonen. But you know, he wasn't exactly forced off the track. He kind of chose to go there. But yeah, it's kind of, it's just, yeah, you just don't overtake off track.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah.
So it's, yeah, that was a penalty. The other one, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a, I'm kind of 50-50 on it, because he did rejoin a bit dangerously, but you know, at the end of the day, in Canada, with the Canada incident, I said after, you know, he did rejoin dangerously, but you know, just let them race, let them go at it. And on one mind, I'm kind of the same, I'm in the same way of thinking here, you know, just let them race and battle it out. And on the other hand, I'm thinking, well, you know, he did force Norris to go wide, which resulted in other cars getting passed. So I don't know exactly with that one. If I had to come down to it, I probably wouldn't have penalized it, depending on what evidence was given. I mean, Ricardo said that the curbs and rumble strips or whatever made the steering more unsettling and all that. But I'm a bit more 50-50 on that one, certainly compared to the other one. But it was really exciting nevertheless to see them fight like that. Norris, who the young rookie, against Ricardo, who's one of the best overtakers on the grid. So at the end of the day, it was intense racing. And maybe, yeah, stuff like that you shouldn't penalize exactly. Maybe I wouldn't have given a penalty for it if I was assured. Luckily, I'm not, and I don't have to take those tough decisions and deal with the harsh consequences of angry fans.
Yeah, maybe Renault should also get Karun Chandhok to produce a video for them so that they can provide new evidence or something. Yeah. I think we didn't even talk about that, where Ferrari tried to provide new evidence by showing the FIA a video of Karun Chandhok analyzing the incident, which was quite funny, to be honest. And, but I'm with you on the Kimi overtake of Daniel Ricciardo. Overtaking on the outside of the track is just not acceptable, and clear penalty, definitely. With the other incident, I'm not 50-50. I have the clear opinion that this shouldn't be penalized. I mean, I think that was also something that was voiced heavily by Formula One fans, that is, there's just too much, or that there are just too many penalties this year. And of course, then there was a thing that IndyCar was on the same weekend, and then they shared some clips where people or drivers were going wheel to wheel, maybe having a little bit of contact, going over some real grass also, which again added to the disappointment of some fans. And I kind of agree with them, you know. The drivers don't need, let's call it the nanny with the FIA that penalizes every little thing, you know. And probably the stewards at the track, they don't really have a choice, you know. They have to penalize things as they are in the rule book, and if the rule book says that it needs to be done like that, well, of course, maybe they don't or they can't just say, well, let them race. Although I heard at the beginning of the season that this should be the directive for the stewards to decide based on let them race. Anyways, I don't think the Norris and Ricciardo incident needed to be penalized, because in my honest opinion, if Norris stayed around the outside of Ricciardo, at least looking from the onboard of Ricciardo, I think there was enough room for him to stay on track. But he saw the door closing and he just decided to just open the steering, knowing that his car was also a little bit unstable, and he basically cut the corner. And yeah, that is my opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair enough. Like I said, at the end of the day, it was good, tight racing, and I think as long as drivers don't come away with damage or something like that, yeah, maybe you don't need to exactly penalize it, and you know, just let them race, and yeah, that in itself is probably, and then yeah, there was another penalty actually that maybe I want to get your opinion on that we got during that race with Sergio Perez. I thought that was quite an absurd penalty to give, because he did. I mean, sure, he gained, you know, an advantage by doing what he did, but that wasn't his fault. I mean, he went around the bollard, did what he had to do, and still got penalized. I couldn't believe it when I heard that, or when I seen that he had actually done what he was supposed to do. Yeah, I mean, he said himself that he followed what the race director told him to do, and you know, it wasn't his fault that the other cars were slowing up and stumbling over each other, and he just rejoined the track the way he was supposed to, and yeah, he still got penalized for it. What did you think? It was wrong to get a penalty for that?
Actually, I don't think it was wrong to give him a penalty there, because, well, maybe it wasn't his fault exactly, but definitely it was the fault of his team not to tell him that when turning into turn, oh god, I don't even know, turn three it is, I guess, that he was behind Magnussen, and when he rejoined the track, I think he overtook two cars or something, and overtaking cars by going off track, by taking a shortcut, for me is much more important or more severe than following or not following a procedure. But well, he followed the procedure, which would have been fine, I guess, in the middle of the race, because I guess then the other way or driving on track is the faster way, definitely. But in this situation, it just wasn't, and I mean Even for him, it must have been, or it should have been clear that if he overtakes cars off track, this is not okay. I mean, we discussed it with Kimi and Danny Ricciardo, that overtaking off track is not okay, and he did exactly that. Of course, he went around the bollard and stuff, but for me, that's not an excuse, really.
Yeah, but that bollard system isn't designed to be a shortcut. You know, it's designed to ensure that the drivers rejoin safely, and I don't think it's his fault that he gained an advantage. Now, he did say after the race that he could have been told to let the guys by, you know, race control. They maybe could have said to give the position back rather than give him the penalty, because, you know,
okay, I give you that. I think that would have been the better solution, actually. Yeah, to tell him that,
because, you know, he said he would have accepted that rather than take the penalty at his pit stop, which would have hurt more, which did hurt more. So yeah.
Actually, why aren't they doing that? Because I think they, back in the day, just remembering that overtake I just mentioned with Vettel on Grosjean, where he did that off track in Abu Dhabi, he gave the place back because the FIA told the team. Why aren't they doing that anymore?
Yeah, it's a strange few races we've had with these kind of penalties, and yeah, I mean, at least we have Austria coming up, where there isn't too much runoff area. There is a little bit, but Yeah, you don't want to be...
It's on the outside, at least.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I know at turn one there's a bit, but, you know, soon after that there's grass. There's not too much runoff area, basically, there. And, yeah, all the drivers, don't, you know, they're sick of these tarmac runoff areas. They want grass, they want gravel. All of them want it. I haven't heard one driver saying that they prefer to have these tarmac runoff areas. I mean, you brought it up there before about IndyCar. IndyCar last weekend was at Road America, which itself is a great circuit. It's really, yeah, it's quite tight, like most of the IndyCar road courses. It's quite tight. There's grass everywhere. The hills on it are crazy. And yet...
And apparently it doesn't have a finish line. I watched the clip and I wasn't able to see a finish line there.
Yeah. Yeah, they do something different with their finish lines. But... I know IndyCar is a spec series and everything, and but I really think Formula One can learn some things from it. I mean, it's very difficult to replicate it because it's a spec series and it's a whole different entity and everything. But I mean, it's great in IndyCar, and none of the drivers ever complain really that, you know, too much. If they're complaining about something, it's something that's worth complaining about. But you know, they're never fussing really as much as Formula One drivers, which is why I'm enjoying IndyCar as much as I am right now. And yeah, there's just a whole host of changes I think needed for the future, and this sort of ties back in, loops back into what we talked about at the start of the episode about all the negativity around the sport. Yeah, just let the drivers race, give them a challenge. And of course, going forward, in order for us to do that, we must provide them with the cars that allow them to race closely and everything like that. So, yeah, of course, the 2021 regulations will rumble on, all the discussions, and hopefully when they come out, we'll be satisfied with them. And then when the season gets underway in a year and a half or so, we'll see a much different sport, which gets a lot of people talking positively and... more people enjoying the sport once more.
So you already gave it away that you didn't think that the French GP was the most exciting race ever, but how would you rate it in terms of our race rating? You can check those ratings on fastestlappodcast.com/stats. How would you rate it? Out of 10.
Yeah, I'm a bit intrigued about this one because it was a poor race. It was, you know, really poor. Probably one of the worst I've ever seen, to be honest. The only bit of action was that bit at the end that we didn't see until after it happened, and we...
Well, we had Ricciardo and Grosjean also in the middle of the race.
Yeah, but, you know, just one overtake... does one or two overtakes make an exciting race? You know, I really don't think so. I'm giving this a pretty low rating, I think, because I really didn't enjoy it. I was really, really bored, I'm not going to lie, during that race. So I'm going to bring out the 0.5s again here and give it a horribly low 3.5.
Well, that's horribly low for you.
It is. I really didn't enjoy it.
I agree. For you, it is really low. For me, I went through the list and checked what I gave other races, and well, to be honest, I didn't expect much from the race, as there aren't too many overtaking spots. We knew that Mercedes would probably be strong, but yeah, it's still it under-delivered. It's safe to say that, and I agree nearly with your rating, and I'm going with a 3 as my race rating. I didn't really enjoy it, but of course it can always be worse.
Well, so. I'm a bit worried, you know, about... I really hope I don't ever rate a race lower than that, because I can't imagine what kind of race would make me rate lower than that. Yeah,
can't even imagine that, what needed to happen there.
Like, everyone finishing in the same spots to qualify, zero overtakes.
Yeah, and maybe a red flag after 10 laps where nothing happens or something.
Yeah,
but let's see. More interesting, I think, will be our driver of the weekend. And to be honest, I do have two contenders as my driver of the weekend, and I haven't decided which one yet. So maybe give me your driver of the weekend, and until then I have a decision on that.
I think I can probably guess who your two are.
Okay.
Can I try?
Try. Yeah, try.
Lewis Hamilton.
Correct.
And Lando Norris.
Wrong.
Oh, okay. Science?
Wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. In terms of my driver of the weekend, yeah, I think I'm gonna go with Norris on this one. You know, Hamilton did a great job, certainly, in qualifying, and then again in the race. But it, you know, I think with Norris, with Hamilton, it's not a surprise. I mean, it's definitely great when he does that. And you know, maybe if Norris didn't perform as well as he did, I think I would have maybe picked someone else, picked Hamilton. But you know, Norris in qualifying did an amazing job in qualifying. I mean, P5, 9 thousandths away from Max Verstappen on his qualifying lap. 2 tenths ahead of teammate Carlos Sainz. He did lose out at the start of the race, of course, and then yeah, was running quite nicely in P7 until that hydraulics issue hit, and then yeah, that allowed the cars behind to close in, and then we already discussed what happened there. But yeah,
you could really see his car twitching around, right, with that hydraulic yeah. issue. I think they even said to him that the diff might be affected first or something, and you could really see that.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to give it to Norris, and actually I think I do know who your other one is. Your other option, Pierre Gasly.
Yes, correct, of course.
Yeah.
No. Well, you guessed the first one, Lewis Hamilton. I think there is not much to say about that. Maybe I'll come back to that in a moment. But the second driver I was thinking about, well, he got out-qualified, I have to say that, but only by, I think it was a tenth of a second. But it is Kimi Raikkonen for me, because he had an okay-ish qualifying, but for me the race outweighed the fact that he got out-qualified by his teammate by finishing P7 in an Alpha. Of course, you have to say that Alpha made some really good progress compared to the last couple of races. Maybe they found a window where their car operates the tires correctly, and that helped him to get a better result. Maybe also the strategy that Kimi Raikkonen was able to go on a harder set of tires compared to the first to the top 10 guys. But finishing P7, keeping a Renault behind, and keeping a Red Bull behind, of course, was really good, I must say, from him. So that is one pick for driver of the weekend. But I think, just thinking about it, I think I have to give it to Lewis Hamilton. Qualifying was without a mistake, out-qualified his teammate. And the race, you have to say, that was a masterclass. Controlling the race from start to finish. And I think the most worrying thing for a neutral fan, or for Ferrari maybe, was that he even went on to set a fastest lap of the race on the last lap with worn tires, and it was just a few hundreds of Vettel that pitted and basically set a lap time, I would guess, with fully charged ERS and the fresh set of soft tires, and to only have that gap, that must hurt to see that for Ferrari. But seeing qualifying and that race performance also compared to his teammate, I have to give driver of the weekend to Lewis Hamilton. And it's quite interesting, actually, because coming into the weekend we had this strange Instagram post like, oh, there's so much hate going on, and I was like, what's going on again? I mean, I didn't understand it at all, but it seems like he enjoyed the weekend and pulled off a great performance.
Yeah, just on that Vettel fastest lap thing, I think he said that he might have had something going a bit wrong with the battery, for his fastest lap, nevertheless, it was still really tight. I think the gap was like 0.02 of a second, between their two fastest laps. And you know, again, it shows one thing that I took from it was it showed the efficiency of both Hamilton and Mercedes, because we heard that Hamilton was told over the radio that Vettel's pitted for soft tires. You know, he's going for the fastest lap. He'll probably get it. Blah blah blah. And so, you know, don't push, don't try, you know, anything. And Hamilton instead was thinking, well, no, we don't give up. We, you know, push to the end and we maximize every point. And he got very, very close to maximizing every point. And, you know, that's just another way that Mercedes are better than everyone else. They are, at least, you know, Hamilton as well, they both click off each other and they make the right decisions. And, you know, he didn't, of course, get the fast lap, but he very, very nearly did. And yeah, it is quite ominous, I think, like you said, for a neutral fan and for Ferrari, if that's the kind of pace that they have in hand when they can deploy it. So let's hope the coming races we'll have a bit more of a closer fight, but and we may actually see someone other than Mercedes win, which would be quite nice.
Yeah, so quite an episode actually for a Grand Prix that maybe wasn't as exciting as we would have hoped, but anyway, a lot to talk about, and also we will have a lot to talk about next week, so join us again. Until next week, goodbye.